Category 9. Catastrophe. Major scale and duration. Multiple populated areas. Chapter 4. Ruins. Sorcery. Traitors. The last time Magnus had seen such devastation was on Terra. Much of the throne world was still in ruins, its many civilizations swept away by continent-cracking weapons, and the monolithic structures of the Imperium yet to be completed. By the time Magnus had come to his father's side, the reconstruction was well underway, but vast swathes of the planet's populace were yet to benefit from the Emperor's worldwide efforts, even so long after unity had been declared. It had been a humanitarian crisis of global proportions, but one met with a coordinated response. No such response would be forthcoming for Attar's people. The city resembled a scene straight from the imaginings of the ancient dramaturgs, the nethermost circle of a terrible realm of torment reserved for the damned. A new and ferocious night had descended on Attar. The sky, sunless as tar-black smoke from the citywide conflagration, blotted out the light. Flames from the burning Prometheum silos that had fallen into the abyssal chasm, splitting the waterless bay, illuminated the ruins with blood-red firelight. Attar's hablocks had tumbled as easily as children's bricks, crashing into one another to form grotesquely intertwined towers of plascrete and steel. Six stormbirds touched down on the edge of the city, though it was hard to reconcile the sight before the legionaries as they disembarked as having once been a city. All that remained were labyrinthine pathways between groaning ruins, treacherous arrangements of buckled structural elements and precariously balanced heaps of debris. Magnus disembarked and let out a stifled sob as the scale of the disaster threatened to overwhelm his psychic defences. Such loss, such terror. So many taken so swiftly, he said, feeling too much, too deeply. How he wished he could undo what had happened here, to take away the pain and make good all that had been broken. The Thousand Suns formed up on their Primarch, and Magnus did his best to shield them from the psychic horror and grief of the city's people.
How can we possibly navigate this? Said Phocis to Carr, staring in wonderment at the smashed city. Every schematic we have is useless. Nothing of the city's street plan remains intact.
We do not need schematics, snapped Magnus. Use your Corvidae senses and ethersight to navigate. There are Medicaid shuttles inbound behind us, so spread out and save as many of these people as you can. Another wave of stormbirds roared overhead, iron-hulled gunships with the distinctive hazard striping of the Fourth Legion. These were no ordinary craft, but workhorse transports modified to carry construction material. Behind them came a host of fat-bellied Mechanicum conveyors, laden with heavy lifting rigs, tunnelers, and rubble excavators. It had been a battle to convince Perturabo to divert any vessel to the rescue efforts in Attar. The resources were better spent in aiding those already in Kalaena, his brother had said. The inference was clear. The deaths here would help balance the unforgiving arithmetic of the Iron Warrior's evacuation timetable. Perturabo had accounted for great loss of life in the process of the evacuation, and his predictions were being proved uncannily accurate. Magnus almost hated him in that moment, for the first time in his life imagining what it might be like to strike one of his brothers. The moment had passed, and Magnus reluctantly conceded the necessity for such hard calculations, though it still sat ill with him to simply write off the inhabitants of Attar as statistics on a balance sheet of life and death. But he had seen an opportunity amid the streams of information coming from Majos Tancarix's data-gathering station just beyond Attar, a name that had seen Perturabo finally authorize a rescue mission.
Move out, said Magnus. I give you leave to use your powers wherever you can to help the Iron Warriors. Is that wise, my lord? Asked Phocis to Carr. There are already mutterings of what we can do.
Do not argue with me, said Magnus. I will not let people die when we might save them. Now go. Phocis Takkar nodded as Magnus turned and walked away.
Where are you going, my lord?
Asked Phocis Takkar.
I'm going to find Conrad Varga, said Magnus. The planetary governor's biotagging is not functional, said Phocis Takkar. It's likely he's dead.
He's alive, said Magnus. I know it.
Well, even if that is true, how will you find him amongst this?
How little you know of me, said Magnus.
Trust me, my son. There is nowhere he can be that I cannot find him.
Swirling dust hung in the air in choking veils, coating everything in white and burying the dead in ashen shrouds. Magnus let himself perceive the world in hues of psychic resonance, overlaying his already superlative vision with echoes unseen by most mortals. Emergency sirens wailed in the distance, as if lamenting the destruction around them. Stone split stone with grinding slowness, and steel reinforcement shrieked as it bent and snapped. Bloody survivors wandered numbly through the wreckage of their homes, vainly calling the names of loved ones and family members. The city was moaning with all its voices. Muffled cries of wounded men and women echoed in the fallen canyons of broken buildings, but these were all too few. Attar's destruction had come so swiftly that most of its populace had died without even knowing what was happening. Magnus pushed swiftly through the ruins, every one of his physical and subtle senses extended to guide him. Conrad Varga was, unusually for imperial governors, a native of the compliant world. Morningstar's people remembered old Earth, and Varga had willingly embraced the newly arrived Imperial forces. His fervour had so impressed the expeditionary fleet commanders and Terran envoys that it had seemed only logical to allow him to remain in command of Morningstar. His death could not be simply chalked up as a statistic. Magnus had only met Governor Varga once, but that was enough. The mental imprint of a mind was as distinctive as a genetic trace or a fingerprint. More so, as no two minds, even those of genetic clones, were identical. Even that fleeting contact would be enough to find the man. Magnus paused in the shadow of a ruined structure that might once have been a commerce building. It leaned at a dangerous angle, its facade sagging like wet parchment. Sprawling shards of stone fell from its roof, and broken glass littered the ground before it.
"You are still alive," said Magnus. "I know it."
He had not lied to Phocis Takkar. Not really. Magnus had no direct knowledge of whether or not Conrad Varga was alive or not, but upon their first meeting he had experienced a brief vision of the man, weeping and soiled aboard a Legion gunship as it soared beneath burning storms. That was no guarantee of anything, of course. No vision could be entirely trusted, for the pathways into the future branched and divided so rapidly and unexpectedly that nothing was ever set in stone. But it was enough to convince Magnus that a rescue effort into Attar was worth attempting. With a twist of thought, he detached his subtle body from his flesh, letting it drift free in a nimbus of dazzling silver-threaded light. Instantly, the screaming thought forms of thousands of people stabbed into his mind like hot knives. He could not shut them out, and nor would he, even if that were possible. The least he could do was share a measure of the city's pain. The ruins sang with the psychic howls of the dead and the dying, a wasteland of souls untimely ripped from their bodies. Anguish filled its broken streets, a paean to suffering that clawed at the walls between worlds, and a siren song to the things that lived beyond. He rose high above the city, seeing further and deeper without a cage of blood and bone to confine him. The monumental scale of Attar's suffering was laid out before him, a shattered wasteland of stone and glass that had once been a thriving city. "How fragile is our grip on all we have achieved," said Magnus, "when everything can be swept away in the moment between two breaths." The etheric realm was densely populated. Thousands of red-limbed ghosts drifted through the city on unseen winds, dead souls now lost in a place they had once known well. Magnus hardened himself against their fear and confusion. They were beyond any help he could offer, their energies already being drawn into the Empyrean. Amid such a vista of death and cacophony of suffering, the living were bright spots of light, candles flickering all too briefly in the darkness. Magnus pushed aside his grief and sought one particular light amid the anguish. He summoned the mental patterns he had felt when Varga first introduced himself. Magnus could read the thoughts of mortals in the blink of an eye, but usually refrained from doing so out of respect for their privacy, and the knowledge that their skulls were too cluttered with insignificant flotsam and jetsam to be of much interest. Conrad Varga's implanted biotracker might be non-functional, but his mind trace was a steady light burning in the heart of Attar. Magnus swooped over the city, past burning hab structures folded like pasteboard, and over flaming ravines that had once been grand parks. He felt his legionaries moving through the city, flaring geysers of psychic power as they melted steel, lifted impossible weights, and eased pain with their gifts. Beyond the city, the hard grey souls of the Iron Warriors were untangling the unholy mess Varga's troops had made of the evacuation, widening roadways, clearing wrecks, and restoring the flow of traffic to Kalena. Only a fraction of Attar's people would be saved, but how could any of them forgive themselves had they turned a blind eye to the suffering, because it was statistically irrelevant? Magnus pushed that thought aside, following the light of Conrad Varga's life until he finally found the man. His body was trapped within an overturned rhino transport vehicle, its hull partially crushed beneath the wall of a collapsed foundry. The crew of the rhino were dead, but Varga was still alive, his aura jagged with pain and frustration. Magnus fixed the location in his mind and sped back to where his physical form awaited, inviolate within a kind shield in the shadow of the Commerce Building. He sighed as he returned to the weight of his physical form. How wondrous would it be to exist forever as a being of light and wonder, without need for corporeal form? What evolutionary processes or transformative act would be needed to achieve such a sublime state of being? A question for another time. Perhaps he would call a symposium on the subject once they were done with Morningstar. Little remained to indicate Morningstar's first city had once stood here. The sky was unusually clear, and the air still. A moment of rare silence on a world tearing itself apart from within. From all around Morningstar, ever-worsening reports were being received of calamitous climate changes, continental-scale earthquakes, and magma storms of such intensity that they scoured the land back to the bedrock. Athava's visor readout told him he was standing exactly where he had seen Magnus walk from the storm, but little indication remained of that. Zarukin had all but vanished, the earth scorched more thoroughly than any invading army could hope to salt it. The walls of its great structures were gone, scattered like a fallen empire with naught but dust as its legacy. All that remained was an undulating wasteland of smashed plascrete that looked to have fallen from a great height, twisted rebars jutting from exposed foundations like desert bracken.
"It's all gone,"
said Niko Ashkali, bending to scoop a handful of the city's powdered remains.
"It is all dust."
"What?"
"I said there is nothing left,"
said Ashkali, standing and brushing her hands together. She glanced over her shoulder to where a single stripped-down stormbird, so skeletal and reduced it really deserved another designation, settled in the ash behind them.
"I am not sure why we are here. Are your warriors not required to aid the evacuation efforts?"
"I've been wondering the same thing,"
said Hathor Mart, appearing at Athava's side and scanning their desolate, empty surroundings.
"Why are we here?"
Athava masked his irritation at Hathor Mart's loose tongue. He had not served with the warrior before now, but could read enough of his Pavoni aura to know he was vain even beyond most of that strutting fellowship. Along with Athava and Hathor Mart, four other legionaries had been assigned to this mission. They were all from different companies and squads, to better disguise that they were no longer with their units. This mission reeked of subterfuge, and Athava detested subterfuge. But the order came directly from his Primarch. Magnus had halted Athava moments before departing for Atar and given him alternative orders.
"Return to Zarukin," said the Primarch.
"Zarukin?" he had asked. "The city is gone. There's nothing left of it."
Magnus shook his head, and the intensity of his gaze was unsettling.
"You are wrong, Athava. There is more yet to discover. I know it."
"The storm will have taken whatever remained of the city."
"No, something lies beneath," said Magnus.
"I did not have time to find it before.
But you will, if you go now."
"What am I to look for?"
Magnus paused, as though turning his mind inwards.
"Look for the sign of a feathered arrowhead," he said at last. "It will guide you."
"What does that mean?"
Magnus grinned, and Athava felt himself mirroring the gesture.
"I do not know, but you will get to discover something wondrous, my son. Truth be told, I'm jealous."
Despite such a prospect, Athava could not shake the notion they were doing something deceitful by being here, something that might have grave consequences. Was that Corvidae instinct, or guilt at being here instead of helping with the planetary relief efforts? He did not know, and that troubled him. Athava shook off his nagging feelings of unease and walked through the eerily quiet ruins, using the cracked foundations and sheared nubs of structural columns to form a mental map of the vanished city.
"Spread out," he said. "Look for anything that could conceivably be a feathered arrowhead." "What's that?" asked Hathor Mart.
"Something that will guide us," said Athava. "Now do it, and report in as soon as you see anything that matches that description."
Hathor Mart and the others set off in various directions, quartering the ruins and hunting for something whose meaning was beyond them. Athava watched them go and turned to Ashkali.
"Conservator Ashkali."
"Nico."
"Of course, I forgot," said Athava. "Tell me, does a feathered arrowhead design have any particular cultural or symbolic resonance on Morningstar?"
"Perhaps," said Ashkali,
bending to draw a circle in the dust with her fingertip. Then, with five quick strokes, she drew a star within it.
"Tell me what you see," she said.
"The planetary sigil of Morningstar."
Ashkali swept away the left and right points of the star.
"Just over 30 years ago, some Agri settlers in the Lavean grottos uncovered some artifacts that appeared to date from a time before Old Night."
"What kinds of artifacts?"
"Just scraps, really," said Ashkali,
tapping a finger against her lip as she sorted through her memories.
"Partially decayed cloth that might have been uniforms, metal fragments and smashed pieces of machinery. But the best preserved piece was what looked like the remains of a helmet."
"A warrior's helmet?"
"I do not believe so. It appeared to be a primitive environment helmet from a void suit. Here, I'll show you."
Athava leaned down as Ashkali produced a data slate from her hip pouch and began scrolling through grainy imagery pulled from an archived database.
"Where are you?"
she said, flipping through scans of crumbling relics pulled from the earth of Morningstar.
"Ah, there it is."
The image quality was poor, the lousy atmospherics disrupting the connection, but Athava felt a thrill of familiarity as he stared at the wavering image. The helm had once been bright yellow, but had faded with age and damage. A painted insignia above the cracked visor was still visible, faint but unmistakably that of a vectored arrow encircled by a stylized ring and wreath that could easily be interpreted as feathers.
Some of the oldest settlers claim this was Morningstar's original sigil, that the other points of the star were added later, said Ashkali.
They may very well be correct.
You know this symbol?
A variant form of it, yes.
Where did you see it? On Terra?
Yes. When the Eastern Ethnarchs fell, the Thousand Suns marched across the cindered remains of the Dragon Nations, preserving and learning all we could of that land's ancient history and culture. Much had already been lost in the fires of self-immolation. But in the ruins of Ba'shu, we found the remains of a storage facility for rockets intended to bear atomic warheads. However, that did not appear to be its original designation. Its true purpose was a launch station for transorbital craft, perhaps the first to breach the solar system. Some of the walls had faded versions of this symbol painted on them.
I see, said Ashkali. But why would you send your men to look for such a symbol now?
Because I have been told it will guide us.
Guide us to what?
I do not know, said Arthava. My Primarch believes this city yet keeps secrets from us. This symbol will guide us to them. No sooner had the words left his lips than he felt a flare of emotion from Hathor Mart. The legionary's excitement was palpable, his Pavoni affiliations transmitting a measure of it to Arthava. He pushed himself into the fourth enumeration to counter it with reason.
Arthava, have you seen this?
What is it? What have you found?
Best you come and see for yourself.
Ashkali saw the change in his body language and cocked her head to one side.
What is it?
We've found something, said Arthava.
They set off through the dead city towards where Hathor Mat was waiting within the remains of a vast structure, easily capable of housing an entire vehicle regiment. Its roof was gone, and only the lower reaches of its reinforced walls remained intact. Hathor Mat stood at the edge of what looked like an elevator shaft for bringing vehicles up from a subterranean hangar. He turned as they approached, and his aura was alight with dancing colours, greens, golds, and blues.
What is it? Asked Arthava,
as he and Ashkali picked a path through the rubble towards him. Hathor Mat simply pointed downwards. Arthava reached the edge of the shaft and leaned over. Bare plascrete walls plunged hundreds of metres into the earth, and portions of a buckled metal stairwell were bolted around its perimeter. Cracked lumen globes stuttered, telling Arthava that power still flowed somewhere below. At the base of the shaft was a curved expanse of bare metal, formed of riveted iron sheets. Its surface was rusted after centuries or more spent beneath the ground, and at its centre was a gleaming hatch with an armour glass portal.
What is this? Began Ashkali.
Those are hull plates, said Hathor Mat, of a starship.
It is so much more than that, said Arthava, seeing the icon from the damaged helmet emblazoned on the sealed hatch.
What do you mean?
Asked Ashkali.
I mean, this is a Terran colony ship.
Magnus ran through the ruins of Atar like a hunting beast on the scent of its prey. He followed Conrad Varga's psychic trace, a magnesium-bright lodestone burning its location into his mind. Traversing the city was a vision of torment. Wherever he looked, he saw suffering. Corpses scattered throughout the ruins, with arms spread wide as though to welcome this Armageddon. Blinded survivors wandering the ruins in shock, men and women on their hands and knees, vainly trying to dig through the rubble of their homes. Truly, this was a vision of the underverse Russ had once spoken of in an unguarded moment, when they had taken shelter from skyamantic lightning on the Bugulma Bellaby uplands. He moved at speed, letting nothing slow him, not towering piles of rubble that would have taken cohorts of bulk servitors hours to remove, nor fires fueled by endless reservoirs of promethium. The great ocean filled him with the power to smash aside debris, transmute steel to mist, and render towering infernos into freezing rain. Like a god, he moved through the rubble of Atar, wreathed in light as he blazed a path through the devastation. And, like any divine figure, he attracted followers. Some simply saw him as a way out, others as a worker of miracles, yet more saw him as a savior, an armored warrior God come to lead them from this nightmare to safety. Singly and in tiny groups they came, stumbling and weeping in his wake as he forged a path through the ruins. That his course took him deeper into Atar seemed to matter not at all. That he moved with purpose and mystical light was all that counted. Magnus did not dissuade them. By following him, they stood a better chance of surviving. By the time he finally reached the source of Conrad Varga's mind trace, over 100 desperate, bloodied souls and grief-maddened wretches had latched onto him. They followed in a ragged host, beseeching him with appeals to help find their loved ones, to dig their children from the rubble, to restore life to dead wives and husbands, to somehow reverse the catastrophe that had swallowed their city. As every one of their cries came to him, he vowed he would plumb the depths of the great ocean so that he would never have to hear such cries in vain again. Ahead was the smouldering wreck of the crushed rhino, its red-painted hull buckled but still intact. It sat in the center of a cratered roadway, half-fallen into a spreading pool of shimmering oil and rainbow-sheened Promethean leaking from the ruptured silos of the refinery. Magnus ran forwards, drawing the power of the great ocean into him and freezing the dangerously flammable liquid to ice. Webbed frost spread across the rhino's hull, and Magnus altered the chemical composition of the air around the vehicle to eliminate the oxygen and keep any sparks from igniting the explosive vapors. A gentle, kind barrier kept the wailing survivors from his back as he pulled open the rhino's hull with his bare hands and threw the torn metal aside. The vehicle's interior was awash with blood. The rhino's crew had been killed on impact, the hard edges of the interior structure smashing them apart as the vehicle rolled. Only Varga had survived, thanks to his placement in the rear of the vehicle, the portion shielded from the worst of the crash by the engine block. The planetary governor was a broad-shouldered and powerful man, his patrician features the result of careful breeding. He lay sprawled across a voxcaster console that was somehow still functional, his shattered legs trapped by the crushed drive mechanism. Magnus wove an intricate pattern in the air, and the metal pinning the governor in place disassembled into its constituent parts. Hundreds of cogs, gears, spindles, and panels floated into the air and fell away as Magnus unmade the machinery with a fractional expenditure of power. Varga slumped as the weight pinning his legs was removed. Blood pumped from his torn flesh, and he tried to scream, but there was no air to draw into his lungs. His eyes bulged in agony and from lack of oxygen. He glared at Magnus as he was lifted from the rhino, as if the Primarch were the source of his pain. The crowd gathered around Magnus, dropped to their knees at the sight of the governor's rescue. Magnus walked through them, bearing Varga in his arms as they raised their arms towards him. The governor's thigh bones had been shattered like glass, and the base of his spine was a pulped mass of marrow and bone. Blood soaked Magnus's chest as he eased his power into Varga's ruined flesh. Etheric energy raced throughout the governor's body, renewing torn blood vessels, restoring destroyed nerves, and mending bones that were little better than powdered fragments. Varga screamed as his nerves awoke to fire, both his femurs cracking as the bones regrew and were made whole. The pain was too much, and his eyes rolled back in his head as unconsciousness claimed him. Magnus nodded, feeling the man's aura settle as swiftly growing flesh knitted over the wounds where, only moments before, splintered nubs of bone had jutted. He turned as he heard the rumble of engines, heavy-duty military grade. A wall of debris blocking the roadway collapsed as a colossal super-heavy tank equipped with a siege-grade dozer blade bludgeoned its way through. A Bane blade, a mobile battle fortress armed to the teeth with the deadliest weapons mankind had yet devised. An avalanche of rubble cascaded into the street as its enormous mass cleared a path for the smaller vehicles behind it, a mix of rhinos, chimeras, and executioners. All were painted in the colours of the red dragons, and Magnus nodded to himself. At least the survivors gathered around him had a means of escape now. The Bane blade slewed to a halt, and the cupola on its topside opened. A soldier, in the tough canvas and leather of a tanker's tunic, emerged, his face obscured by a visored helmet and rebreather apparatus. A golden pin depicting the encircled star that was this planet's sigil glittered at his lapel. Something in its orientation seemed strangely relevant to Magnus, though he could not say exactly why.
"Get those vehicles over here," he ordered. "There are survivors that need transport to safety."
"Is that Governor Varga?"
asked the soldier, his voice muffled by the rebreather.
"It is, but I will carry him out. Open your assault ramps and help these people."
The soldier touched his hand to the side of his helmet and nodded at whatever order he was being given. He dropped back inside the Bane Blade and slammed the hatch shut behind him. Seconds later, the vehicles opened fire.